This is episode 34 of the Reading Coves podcast. If you're a book lover who may be interested in joining our online book club, please visit our website at thereadingcove.com. For September 2013, we're discussing Touch and Go by Lisa Gardner. So hi, I'm Millennia from Florida.
And I'm Roberta from Georgia.
And Roberta and I are gathered today to discuss the Reading Cove's 154th pick, Touch and Go by Lisa Gardner. And it was chosen by Cove member Lori up in New England. So what'd you think of Touch and Go, Roberta?
I liked it overall. I mean, you know, every book's not going to be perfect, but I liked it. And what had helped is I had mentioned when we were doing discussion questions a couple years ago when my husband and I were on a trip, going there and back, we listened to that Love You More. So I knew a little bit more about the background of one of the law. Well, now she's really more into investigation, but she was a law enforcement agent, Tessa Leone. Mm-hmm. So I think it helps if you have a little bit of background, though. I did feel the author, you could read this as a standalone. You wouldn't be left thinking like, huh? So she did give enough background and, you know, it was a different situation. So you could plow ahead without feeling like you were missing out on the character development.
Right, right. I thought it started off pretty interesting. I was intrigued in the beginning when they were at the restaurant and you could tell that the wife was struggling because her husband apparently had an affair and she still wasn't trusting him. And so I was really drawn in to that. Then they get home and the whole family's kidnapped. And it's like, okay, you know, what's going on? And then it's like the pace stopped. It just started to crawl and I just slowly lost interest. It kept going back and forth between the investigators and them trying to find the family. And then the family with the people who kidnapped them. And I don't feel like it was paced that well.
Yeah. That's probably my one thing that wouldn't have given it a higher rating, that the pace a little bit could have been, you know, edited out and the pace could have been a little bit faster. I mean, I know they have to give you details so you're just not lost, but sometimes the authors, you know, give you too much detail and it bogs it down and does slow down the pace. And, you know, some people don't care for that.
Yeah, I don't think that it's intentional. But I think what happened with this story was the whole plot of the family being kidnapped. And then later on, you find out that it was the husband who was behind it. And, you know, all his motivations was because he was embezzling money from his company and trying to outsmart his wife if they ever divorced. Like, he was planning the divorce the whole time.
I know, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, it was. Like, obviously you expected to leave her. But yeah, so I think the plot just wasn't enough to fill all the pages. So it had to be drawn out, this whole back and forth, you know, with the investigation and the family and drawing out the mystery. And there just wasn't enough there to support it. So I just ended up losing interest. And, you know, by the end, when you find out it was him and he wanted to fake his own death and, you know, all this other stuff, it was just, I don't know. I didn't care much by then. So I ended up giving it a C because, you know, it started off pretty interesting, but it was average to me by the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've read, you know, much better thrillers or mysteries and everything, you know, that, and like I said, sometimes even with a well-known author, a popular author like Lisa Gardner, mm-hmm. you know, you have your better ones and your ones,
right.
You know, weren't quite up to the standards of the earlier ones. But I mean, this one, the main thing is you did have some interesting twists, as you said, that you weren't really expecting the husband to be the really evil one. I mean, when you got right down to it, he was just as evil, if not more so, than the kidnappers.
Oh, absolutely. I think
because they were just doing it for money, you know, and the you know, the couple of them were definitely, you know, psychopaths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, where are you going to, you know, the pickings have to be slim to find mentally stable people to do that, you know?
Well, you're not going to be a hired killer if you're like, you know, got all your oars in the water.
Exactly.
you're going to have some, you know, issues going there. And, you know, that's why people go into certain things like that, that they have that profile. But I mean, the radar was, you know, the most complex one, because he wasn't so much a psychopath, but he still was maybe basically a sociopath. He didn't always feel the remorse, but he did have a little bit of redeeming quality about him, since he was, you know, he could see what was going on with Libby, and he tried, you know, as far as her going into withdrawal from the drug addiction. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he tried to help her daughter, too, Ashlyn, when she was, you know, miscarrying. And that was kind of, you know, a surprise, too.
Yeah.
Especially it was a surprise when you found out who was the father, because you think, oh, well, you know, a lot of kids, and you see even in, or hear about in real life, that they'll act out, so to speak, by doing, you know, either getting into drugs or, you know, running around with the wrong people, or, you know, having early, you know, intimate relationships with kids their own age. But when you found out that, you know, she was having this fling with an older guy that, you know, was well known to her family, that was real high on the ew factor. You know, that guy, he needed to be, you know, hung up to dry, because you just don't do things like that.
Yeah, and you know, I thought that subplot with what's her name, Ashlyn?
Ashlyn, yeah.
The daughter. That was, and some people commented on it in the discussion, because we've already had our discussion, our online discussion with the rest of the Cove members. And, you know, they were saying that they felt that came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, you know. I mean, it did add a kind of a little extra, you know, bizarre twist to the whole thing, because it wasn't what you were expecting at all.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You were expecting some little boyfriend that, you know, she had had this little relationship with, just to get back at her family because she was so mad with them. Mm-hmm. But she kept all that anger in, too, which, you know, sure didn't help. It didn't come out until they were all cooped up together.
Right.
And then all this poison came spewing out, but you couldn't really blame her. You know, if anybody in the whole situation, she was reacting to it, but she had no really blame in this thing. She hadn't, you know, she was trying her best to be a good daughter.
Yeah, and I think she, you know, what can you expect from her? The odds are stacked against her. You have a father who goes into the relationship with your mom poised for divorce, you know, yeah. Plotting from the get-go. First to, you know, for the family to be dissolved. And then you have a mom who's addicted to drugs, emotionally weak and yes. Pretty unstable. So, you know, where was that to leave her?
Right. You know, she was the true victim, if yeah. anyone's in this whole situation from the beginning, because people think, oh, well, you know, they won't, even if they're a teenager, they won't notice. But, you know, even little kids, they pick up on things. They know what's going on, even if they can't always be old enough to give a name to it. But they know something's wrong. You know, they're sensitive to the what's going on in the house. But and then the other thing was, too, at the very end, that was a big twist when you find out that, you know, Libby and Ashlyn aren't going to be left, you know, having to sell off everything and be poverty stricken, that you find out what Radar gave Libby was the code to get all this money that Justin had socked away. So it was kind of like, you know, things that went around came around for the good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Justin didn't get to run off and enjoy it. And Libby didn't really have to worry, you know, basically for the rest of her life, which was a good thing.
And then there was the investigator. She was a big part of the story. Tessa?
Tessa.
You know, she had her daughter, and so she was dealing with all the guilt about, you know, being away from her daughter all the time, and her whole backstory with her husband who was killed. And
yeah, I mean, she had a lot to deal with. So, and then, you know, she had lost her previous job, but then was working as sort of a private investigator. So that way she even had a little bit more leeway, even though she had to work with all these other people. There were so many people involved, you know, between her and the FBI and then the local police. But basically it was sort of a thing where the little guys were the ones that did the best work, you know, that Tessa and then Wyatt, they do more what was going on than these, you know, bigwigs from the higher government positions.
Right.
You know, but then they knew the area a little bit more than these other people, too, and knew what could be happening. So, you know, yeah. But it was pretty tricky because it was out in the middle of nowhere. And the bad thing is, you know, even if the other crazy guy hadn't tried to kill them, even if they had, you know, not killed them, then they could have just, you know, left them there. And they would eventually, like, you know, starved and died from dehydration. And
yeah.
Because it was just out in nowhere, and there's no, since it was hadn't ever opened, it was on, I guess, mothballed or whatever you want to call it, that no one would think to come check out there. It was just really good detective work that they were found and survived.
Right. And in the end, it was Libby and Ashlyn who ended up getting all the money.
Right. Well, I mean, and well, so after all the torture and horrible stuff they've been through, that, you know, that they deserve that. And I don't think either one of them will feel it's a shame that, you know, Ashlyn was going to grow up without a father. But shoot, he was going to leave anyway. So she still would have had an absentee father. So, you know, it would be terrible to have your father killed, but at least everything's closed. You don't have to deal with all these other emotional issues later that, you know, that I think she's not going to be a mess down the line and, you know, need years of therapy, so to speak, that she'll be able to deal with it and can see that, well, you know, I went through this horrible thing, but Mom and I survived, and you know, we can start over and have a new life, even with just the two of us.
Right.
And as the other people said in the Cove online discussion, you kind of hope, of course, maybe they'll be in future books. You kind of hope that Tessa and Wyatt get together. It's sort of a different type of couple, but they both have things, you know, they've had to deal with in the past, and they both have been in law enforcement. So they'll understand what needs to be done and the hours and everything. It won't be like with some people that you hear a lot about. Police officers or law enforcement people getting divorced because the women they marry, they don't realize, even though they should from the get-go, that they're going to be gone a lot. There's going to always be a chance that, you know, something can happen to them. It's a very difficult, you know, life.
So do you have any scenes that stand out?
Let's see. I mean, well, a lot of the things when they were in the jail were pretty yucky, you know.
Yeah.
That they had to deal with, you know, just the everyday things of not having, you know, showers. Because I could just kind of visualize that, you know how it is, that if even if you're feeling really sick, if you don't get to take, at least for me, if you don't get to take a shower even for one day, you just feel like, yuck.
Yeah.
Just feel like there's yucky, slimy stuff on you. So I can't imagine, you know, that kind of... I could relate to that, you know, the poor Libby just felt like miserable, even besides not getting to eat regularly or get enough fluid and everything, just to feel grimy, you know.
I know, and to think that it was her husband.
Yeah.
What was his name? Justin?
Justin.
That orchestrated, who was behind the whole thing.
Yeah.
And could have stopped at any time. It's just, I mean, wow. I wonder if Libby could ever trust her own judgment again.
I know, because, you know, he put on a good show. Like I said, he was pretty much a psychopath and sociopath both. That, you know, he really didn't care for people, but he put on this good show like he was this real, you know, alpha guy, mm-hmm. you know, instruction. But he still could be a real man and take care of his family and love his family. And then even before she found out he was doing this, then to find out that he'd been having this affair, and then later on that this wasn't with this young girl that, you know, almost could be their daughter, that wasn't the first one. He'd had other ones before, you know, just sort of like his dad, sort of like history repeating itself, except Libby, instead of becoming an alcoholic like Justin's mom, you know, she turned to the pills because pills were easier to get.
Right.
Just this thing of how people react to the infidelity and the affairs of their partners, you know, after they think they have a good marriage, that would just be really hard. And then the other thing, you know, of course, when the shock to Libby of seeing her daughter having a miscarriage. It's like, where was that coming from? Where did that come from? You know, I mean, you had a little foreshadowing about the pregnancy test, but you just thought, oh, well, you know, maybe Libby's pregnant, poor thing. And now her husband's fixing to trail off and leave her with a, you know, teenage daughter and a baby. But then, so that was kind of a surprise.
Yeah.
And that really stood out that, you know, wow, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, there were some, you know, quite a few twists in the end. And I just remember, because I read this maybe about 2 weeks ago now, I remember feeling it was, the twists came at me as pretty anticlimactic because I had kind of lost interest in the whole thing, in the whole mystery of who was behind it and, you know, where this was leading.
Right.
So, but yeah, I remember all those twists. I think if I had been enjoying it more all along, then, you know, those would have felt, you know, more exciting to me.
Right.
But yeah, but the group overall enjoyed it. I think the average grade was a B minus.
Right. So
from everybody. So it was pretty well liked by comparison to a lot of the other books we read.
This is true. We've had like widely swinging opinions, but you know, that makes for a good discussion too. If everybody likes or everybody hates it, it gets sort of boring, you know, to have other people's viewpoints about it. And sometimes somebody else will see things from a different point of view and bring out points that you might not have even thought about. So even something like this that is a basic, you know, popular book, not a very literary, deep book, it's still, there's a lot of things, you know, with life and relationships that you can relate to.
Yeah, and one point that came out in our discussion, everyone pretty much agreed that Justin was responsible for, you know, the woes of this family. And, you know, there were one or two people who thought, no, Libby should take some responsibility too. I don't know. I think that she was, you know, like I said before, a bit of a weak woman.
Right.
And very dependent on her relationship with her husband and her marriage. And she was hollow without that. When that crumbled, you know, she becomes an addict. She doesn't know who she is.
Right.
And, but I still place the blame ultimately on Justin.
Right. Well, I mean, because with her, she had had her own tough childhood,
right?
You know, and hadn't had a lot of emotional support. And she had put everything into, being, you know, a wife and a mother. That was her identity.
Right.
And when she thought she was going to lose that, you could see how she would be so emotionally hurt that she would do anything to, you know, help her cope with the pain of that, you know, because something like that, you know, a lot of people, they're not able to eat, they don't sleep well, they don't function well. And so, you know, unfortunately, that if you don't have a real stable thing or you don't have a big support group, then you're going to look for something, anything that'll dull the pain, be it alcohol or drugs or whatever.
Right.
In the long run, you know, yeah, she wasn't as strong, but that wasn't entirely her fault.
Right.
So I see Justin is, you know, I put all the blame on him because, you know, Libby had not done anything. She had done everything for him to be a good wife and, you know, support his business and everything. So it wasn't like she had taken him for granted or, you know, not lived up to her obligations. So
that's true. So yeah, that's why I didn't really see her to be, you know, at fault.
No.
At all.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a different personality would have handled it differently, maybe.
Yeah, a stronger person, you know, he might have been in big trouble.
Exactly. a stronger woman would have
found some way to have him whacked.
That's right. <You know? laughs> Or leave him hanging out to dry without a penny.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our kind of short and sweet take on Touch and Go by Lisa Gardner. And we want to thank our listeners for tuning in. As always, leave us your comments below and let us know what you thought if you read Touch and Go or if you're a fan of Lisa Gardner. And stay tuned for our next episode. We'll be discussing The House of Velvet and Glass by Katherine Howe. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.